Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Marching on toward episode 1,000. This is episode 953 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined today by the lovely, the talented, and indeed, the scholarly, Brittany Page, everyone.
We have a ton to get to today, I'm
sure. Everything's great.
I'm sure you've been following the news. It's a genuinely frightening time to be alive, but also just be doing the kind of things that we do. So we do want to say, though, that COVID took Jesse out for quite a while. And
the second time, I feel pretty good. I mean, I feel pretty good because I don't have COVID anymore and I'm healing pretty rapidly, recovering pretty rapidly.
But you tested positive for a full week.
Yeah, 7 full days. And only on the last day of like shadowy positivity. You know what I mean by that? Like when the line... I had to put my reading glasses on to see that the line was there. I don't know if that's an indictment of my eyes or my age or what, but and I lost days. I mean, I was in the guest room.
You entered some sort of period of delirium or something.
Because I was counting like how many days have I been in bed. I'm like, oh, 3 days. That's not bad. And then when I kind of came out of it, I redid the math. And I missed 2 full days.
Yeah.
It was 5 full days. I mean, it was 7 full days. But I lost 2 in there, so.
Yeah.
It was second time, but I feel good, though. This is what I was going to say. I feel good about. I know that I've had it, because, you know, sometimes people have it, they're asymptomatic. Nobody would know that. Once in May of 2022, after going to a wedding, and then once in 2025, after having gone to a wedding.
Yeah, well, and what's remarkable, I never tested positive, but I definitely had something going on.
Like this time,
even
around.
Just now, I have stuff rattling around in my head and my throat.
It seems like you've got a mild cold or something, but you're testing negative the whole time and always.
Yeah, I mean, but there would be times where I felt like I couldn't work out. My throat was burning. My chest was burning.
Yeah.
But I never tested positive. So, but we quarantined and, you know, whenever you would come out of your delirium and out of the room, you would wear a mask and you started at some point working even when you were sick and you'd go down to the studio with a mask on and we'd have to navigate that. So it was...
Hang on. Sorry, we'll just leave that. Let's just go.
pretty horrifying for people to hear. But all of this to say, COVID is still a thing.
Yeah.
And
this is a worse version than I got the first time, by the way.
Yeah,
Razor throat thing or whatever. Not great.
It hits people in different ways. And if you can, this is the unfortunate thing, is that, you know, we have RFK Jr. in charge and he's hand-picking anti-vaccine activists to put in place to dismantle our public health infrastructure. And the COVID vaccines are much more difficult to get right now, even though he says that anyone who wants one can get one. Obviously, that's not true. And there's this patchwork that has been created across the country where some states are stepping in to try to ensure that the people who live in that state can get the vaccine.
Right.
Kaiser recently announced that's who we are through, that they are going to cover the members that are a part of Kaiser to get the vaccine. But again, that's disturbing because you have to have access to insurance, or
right,
you have to be living in a particular state. And again, your ability to access life-saving preventative health care should not be dependent on whether or not you can afford health insurance in this country or whether or not you live in a blue state in this country. So it's really disturbing. And ultimately, people who cannot get vaccinated and who will not get vaccinated because of the barriers in place to that vaccination make us all at greater risk for serious illness.
Or those who just voluntarily decide to be asswipes.
Sure. Yeah, that, yeah. So if you can, please get the COVID vaccine. If you can, please mask when you're in areas with a lot of people, and at the airport where people love to cough in your face, all of those
things.
They
do love it.
They love to do that.
It's like, oh, where are you traveling? Oh, nowhere. I just bought a ticket so I can come and cough in people's faces.
they're notoriously disgusting at airports.
It is.
It's very horrifying.
It is a horror show.
Sometimes, you know, it's not just airports. The other day I saw this guy just on the corner, standing on the corner, going to town in his nose, just going to town. I don't know what was in there, if there was a spider in there or something. And
maybe he lost a coin, like a Spanish doubloon or something.
No, and then he touched the button and started like pushing the button repeatedly. And
yeah,
I'm like, oh my God, this is why I don't touch buttons. You won't see me touch an elevator button. I'll stand in there and have a staring contest with someone who gets on the elevator, and we'll just stare at each other, and I'll wait for them to touch the button before I will ever dare touch that fucking button. All right. I'm being a little hyperbolic, but not too much. All right, so we do want to read a message from Randy and Sharon G, who wrote us and said, can you confirm the dates for the big No Kings 2.0 protest march in D.C.? We're planning on flying out there for it, but we're getting conflicting information about whether the D.C. march will be on the 17th of October rather than the 18th. Any info would be greatly appreciated. My understanding, according to NoKings.org, is that the protests across the country are October 18th.
Which, now, what day is that of the week?
So that's Saturday, October 18th.
Yeah. Yeah, so they would do it on a Saturday, not a Friday.
Yeah, and looking at this map on NoKings.org, it says No Kings in Washington, D.C., Saturday, October 18th, 12 to 3.
Yeah.
So the whole purpose of it is to have this national show of force, and No Kings, the first time, was really successful.
Millions nationwide. Millions and millions, multiples of millions nationwide.
I think this is going to be even bigger. So listen, we're talking about this more than a month before this happens. Please make plans, if possible, to get out there, join with your community members. We actually are going to have, in upcoming episodes, direct calls to action and ways to get involved and how to do community organizing. Because again, that's a really important part of what we want to talk about on the show, is how to get involved, how to stay involved, and how to do things that have you feeling less alone and isolated.
And now more than ever, and that oftentimes is kind of perceived as kind of a throwaway phrase, but after the last few days, now more than ever, we need to band together, bind together, draw one another close, and be resolute in our alliance with one with another.
Yeah. So thank you for that message, because it prompted me to go and verify and make sure what day this is, so that we can be promoting it. And that was important for us to make sure we clarified everyone.
Unfortunately, we will not be going to the No Kings. We've long had a vacation planned, a much needed vacation, and it's taking place over No Kings. We'll be out of the country. But as I said in a video briefly yesterday, I would very much strongly recommend and encourage everybody to get out there and get involved, because it's needed to show, a show of force is needed to send a signal to the feckless fucking mainstream media that there is a wide swath of this country that is very unhappy and discontented with the fascism that is taking root or has taken root in the country.
I do think it's funny to call it a vacation when we have specifically worked in work plans.
And, yeah, I'm going to be working.
Yeah, right. Specific work goals. But, you know, it's a blend, okay? It's a blend. Let's stay on the positive side of things, all right?
Part of it will be a vacation.
Yeah. Okay, so...
When I'm not working, it'll be a vacation.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into it. And we're going to start with not the thing that you think we're going to start with, because I want to start with abuse at the hands of ICE agents, federal agents, as we've been seeing the lawlessness in the streets. And this happened in Los Angeles, in Van Nuys. This was an instance where, after the Supreme Court decision, which essentially gave the green light to law enforcement to approach and detain and question individuals based on their perceived race.
Yeah, they wouldn't know their citizenship status. So American citizens can be detained if you are brown, if you resemble in the mind of an ICE agent someone who's Latino or otherwise. They could just stop you.
Based on the language that you speak, based on what location you happen to be in, if you're in a Home Depot parking lot, for example.
Right. Yeah.
All of those things are considered fair game to detain.
And legal.
A human being.
Yeah. Thanks, Bart O'Kavanaugh.
And as we've seen, people have been detained. They have tried to give their real ID. That has been not up to the standards of Department of Homeland Security officers who take possession of these individuals.
Yeah.
So this is really dangerous, and we're seeing how dangerous it is getting in this case with this reporting on what happened in Van Nuys.
Playing out today, one day after the Supreme Court lifted the ban on so-called roving immigration patrols. This video of federal agents swarming a car and detaining people at gunpoint was captured in a Van Nuys parking lot this morning.
With weapons drawn, federal agents walk toward the driver's side of this red vehicle in a Van Nuys parking lot. Luis tells us he was in the area when he saw what was happening and began to film.
That's when I saw this chaos, guns drawn, everything. The girl was there screaming like, oh, like, why are you guys pointing guns at us? Like, we're not doing anything. That's when they got close. They break the window. They dragged the guys out. And then the female, she said she was pregnant, but they were just all these guys gang up on her.
A man who identified himself as a friend of some of the people in the car did not want to go on camera, but said the two men are lawful permanent residents and that the woman is a U.S. citizen. On the passenger side, an agent points his gun at a woman who said, if you touch me, I'm suing you. She then steps out of the car. This comes one day after the Supreme Court lifted a federal judge's temporary ban on the Department of Homeland Security's so-called roving patrols, which have been denounced as unconstitutional and carried out through racial profiling. Like many others documenting the aggressive sweeps and arrests, Luis said he wanted to film as evidence.
They're always doing something they're not supposed to do. So what we need witnesses, we need people recording because, oh, we didn't do, oh, no, you know what, we got you on tape, bro, because they do a bunch of stuff they're not supposed to by the book.
The man who says he knows some of the people in the car says the woman was released and that the two men are in immigration custody.
What a fucking terrifying time.
Oh, yeah.
To exist in this country as a citizen, certainly, but if you're even a lawful permanent resident, and even imagine coming from, I don't know why you would come to America on vacation as someone from Mexico or any other country. I mean, Canadians have been held for days and days and days and days at a time in immigration detention who are just here. There's a mile-long list of countries that are recommending, warning their citizens, don't go to the United States, even on vacation.
Right. Yeah, it's absolutely horrifying, and this is a form of violence. And I...
Literal violence, not figurative violence.
I wrote a Substack on what political violence means, because lately in the headlines, we're seeing a very narrow definition of political violence.
Right.
And political violence is... conservative activist Charlie Kirk getting shot in the neck and murdered at a public event. That absolutely is political violence. Political violence is also many other things. And I think it's important that we start recognizing violence in things that our society doesn't necessarily code as violence. And especially if you have a certain position in society, you may not code certain things as violence. But I guarantee you that the people who are going to be harmed by that Supreme Court decision consider what's happening to them violence.
Yeah, I mean, they're bringing that the Family Guy meme. Mm-hmm. It's not, I mean, it's from Family Guy. It's an mm-hmm. episode where they hold up the color palette.
Right.
And, oh, free to go. Right. Oh, danger or whatever. Safe, unsafe.
Right.
And the darker your skin is, the more unsafe you are. The Supreme Court made that the law of the land in the United States. Temporarily, I guess, is what the deal is. But so they're suspending constitutional rights, certain constitutional rights, where they apply to darker skinned people, people who speak, who are multilingual in our society, mm-hmm. who happen to be in places where ICE is congregating. This is extremism. This is right wing extremism that brown people and black people and marginalized communities are taking the brunt of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's get into Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was murdered on September 10th, shot in the neck at a Turning Point USA debate event at a
the
Utah.
Prove me wrong thing that he does.
A Utah college campus. He was shot about 20 minutes into his speech while he was talking about mass shootings, while he was being questioned about mass shootings and his position on that. And the last thing out of his mouth was something clarifying, something about gang violence, I think was the final sentence out of his mouth.
Let me just say this. As I have been doing on YouTube all week, we're not going to whitewash the legacy and the record of Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was a racist, Christian nationalist bigot. Full stop. It's what he was. And it doesn't do anybody any favors to, oh, but he was a family man and he loved his wife and kids. Yeah, all that could be true. You don't think racists love their wife and kids? You don't think Christian nationalist bigots are adored by their children and wives? Of course they are. He was what he was. He brought inexorable harm to communities, transgender community, immigrant communities, just the black community in general. He said that it was, we made a huge mistake when we passed the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s. Bringing equality to black people in the United States in the later part of the mid part of the last century was a mistake. And the media right now, by the way, is bending over backwards to paint him as or Ezra Klein, that he practiced politics the right way, he said.
So you haven't gotten there yet, but let me just kind of interrupt and say there has to be a way to speak factually and honestly about who and what Charlie Kirk was while at the same time denouncing violence.
Yes, absolutely.
And so,
oh, because I hadn't said that yet.
Right.
Of course. Well, I've been saying it all week, so it's kind of a Charlie Kirk did not deserve to die. Full stop. Big fat exclamation point on the end of that. Of course. It's a self-evident thing to be said that he does not deserve to die at the hands of a high-powered long rifle with a scope from a distance in an assassination. Yes. Yes.
And here's what I will also say. You're not going to find me telling people who were direct victims of his rhetoric and, for example, the professor watch list that he created to generate racist abuse and death threats on professors that he felt advocated ideas that he doesn't like. I mean, that's really what's the more insulting aspect of this, is that the media is just going to bat for him and his record, but misrepresenting everything that he stood for. I mean, even in that Ezra Klein article where he says he was practicing politics the right way, the argument is that he had this commitment to free speech. Does he have a commitment to free speech when he's creating a professor watch list to gin up hatred and racist abuse and death threats against professors that he feels are teaching and speaking in a way that he doesn't think they should?
I've seen multiple professors independently on different platforms talk about how they received emails of photos of their home.
Oh, yeah.
And what's the intent of that?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like, oh, hey, I need your siding needs to be touched up. You want me to do some power washing? No, it's to intimidate.
Well, again, what happened after he was killed? Before we even knew who the suspect was, which we know now, they have a suspect in custody.
White, 22-year-old.
Yeah.
From Utah.
It's a white man, like many of these mass shooters are. After it was announced that he was killed, before we even know who the suspect was, the right wing mobilized, said that we were going to war.
Right.
That Democrats need to be crushed by the power of the state. They explicitly tied this violence to leftists. And multiple HBCUs were under lockdown after receiving terroristic threats.
Yeah.
Now, why would, in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's death, why would HBCUs be targeted with terroristic threats? Does that say something about his legacy?
For those who don't know the acronym, it's Historically Black Colleges and Universities, HBCUs. Yeah.
Does that say something about his legacy?
Right.
That the target was immediately black people.
Right. Well, he did say the American Democrat Party hates this country. They want to see it collapse. They love it when America becomes less white.
Yeah, and listen.
It's a direct quote, word for word, from Charlie Kirk.
And listen, we're getting anger from all sides when we talk about this issue. We're getting people accusing us of celebrating Charlie Kirk's death. We're not celebrating Charlie Kirk's
death.
Have
not done that one.
You cannot construe anything that we've said to be a celebration of Charlie Kirk's death. We get death threats. We faced a Trump supporter in court from rape and death threats just, 3 months ago, okay? And you think that I'm going to be out here celebrating? I mean, anyone who does this work is at risk of getting their shot in the neck. When we did a live event a couple years ago, we had a discussion about should we be mindful of the people coming in and whether they are armed and what should we don't have any protection. What should we do? You know, you can't wear a bulletproof vest and protect your neck and your head.
Yeah.
These are legitimate concerns. And so then we have the people who are saying, well, how dare you say he didn't deserve this? Right?
Yeah.
You know what? You go ahead and say whatever you want to say publicly.
I get your point, but I would caution everybody not to, because there are lists being created. There's a website out there.
Yeah, and we won't name it,
but
they are putting people on that. But again, they're putting people on that list who anything other than an outward display of mourning is being categorized as celebration.
Are you saying that they're monitoring their free speech? They're restricting their free speech? Huh. That seems antithetical to the way the media is portraying the entire movement of Charlie Kirk. Free speech warriors, right?
Well, even the Department of Defense, right, announced that they are going to be monitoring for people's posts.
Hunting. Hunting is the word they used.
Is that the Department of Defense or the Department of State?
Department of Defense, Pete Hegseth.
Right.
Department of War.
Right, I was talking about the Department of State and immigration decisions, right? Oh. Isn't that what was reported as
well? I
thought
you said Defense Department.
But isn't the Department of State also reported as though they're going to be...
Yes, immigrants.
Right.
Anybody who's here, lawfully or not, obviously, they're probably not dealing with people who are undocumented. But if you are here under a green card, you know, permanent residence on some kind of a work visa, if they see your post that you celebrated or did anything other than mourn the loss of Charlie Kirk, they're going to revoke your legal status in the country.
Yeah, I just found it. The State Department on Thursday indicated it would review the legal status of immigrants praising, rationalizing, or making light of conservative activist Charlie Kirk's fatal shooting.
Yeah.
Not free speech.
Right.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Horrifying. So there's many aspects of this that are genuinely scary. And part of it is the way that the president has actually leaned into amplifying the targets that are already on the backs of marginalized communities, especially marginalized communities, but also anyone who is looked at as a quote-unquote enemy from within.
Radicals on the right as well. We have radicals on the left. People have are watching all of these videos and cheering. Some people are cheering that Charlie was killed. How do we fix this country? How do we come back together?
I'll tell you something that's going to get me in trouble, but I couldn't care less. The radicals on the right oftentimes are radical because they don't want to see crime. They don't want to see crime.
Worried about the border.
They're saying, we don't want these people coming in. We don't want you burning our shopping centers. We don't want you shooting our people in the middle of the street. The radicals on the left are the problem, and they're vicious, and they're horrible, and they're politically savvy. Although they want men and women sports, they want transgender for everyone, they want open borders. The worst thing that happened...
We are a failed state with this abject dumb fuck as president of the... That is nothing he said. The only thing he said there that was true is that he couldn't care less. He's saying that the mob of 1,600 plus people who violently assaulted the United States Capitol in an attempt to overthrow the United States government so that he could have another term, even though he lost to Joe Biden by 7+ million votes, all they wanted, they just were sick of crime. That's it. When they were shitting, spreading feces in the halls of our temple of democracy, they were just against the crime. It's just fuck you, man.
Well, we're seeing they're blaming the leftists when, again, all of the evidence seems to point to the shooter being a graper, actually.
Yeah, a Nick Fuentes devotee.
Right. And again, they're automatically blamed the left, even without knowing who the suspect was. And now that they know, the only really backtracking I've seen is from Nancy Mace, who went from... this is probably a trans person, and they should, you know.
It was trans, and then it was, we need the death penalty.
Right.
And then as soon as it was found out to be a white man, something about.
Pray for them.
Charlie would want us to pray for them. She's such a transparent fucking freak.
But what else is happening is the right wing is saying, this Democrats, you did this,
right?
Because you call us Nazis, you call us Hitler, you call us fascists. What do you think people are going to do in response to that? Never mind that J.D. Vance called Trump America's Hitler.
Yeah.
And he was asked about it at the vice president presidential debate, actually, to respond to being America's Hitler. And they have multiple times talked about the Democratic Party as fascist. Don Jr. is making the rounds talking about how you can't call someone you disagree with a fascist. These are just some of his tweets. The Democrats will stop at nothing to push their political agenda. The party of Antifa has gone full fascist. This is truly disgusting. Fascist Democrats like Cuomo are openly reverting to their party's historic position in support of outright segregation and discrimination in America. Sad.
Yeah.
We all know that the rhinos are secretly happy about the indictment, but the fascist left won't stop with Trump. They're power hungry and will do anything to crush their political opponents. If we're ever going to save our country, the entire GOP needs to finally figure that out.
Hey, let me tell you, the media needs to do their fucking job. It's because they do a better job. Just do your job. Kate Baldwin and fucking John Berman and Brianna Keeler, all these people on CNN are just tripping all over themselves to give the right wing the opportunity to spin this nonsense and not call them out on, wait a minute, RFK called Donald Trump Hitler. J.D. Vance called him Hitler. People he picked for his administration have said he's Hitler. And Donald Trump himself has called Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Democrats fascist a million times. It does not create violence.
One more. The fake news gets triggered whenever anyone dares to tell the truth about the fascist lawfare from Alvin Bragg and Joe Biden. So, again, but there's, you know, tweets resurfacing from Charlie Kirk where he called the left cockroaches. This dehumanizing language has been used by the right wing, and they're trying to act like they've only dealt with us with, you know, in cotton candy houses.
Right, right.
And it's just not true.
Donald Trump on Memorial Day said, happy Memorial Day to all, and the fucking scum on the left who tried to da-da-da.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
shut the fuck up.
It's so absurd. It is so absurd. This is kind of as an aside. This was Donald Trump talking about D.C. because we're still under federal occupation. And this is apparently how he views.
Well, and now the troops are armed.
Right.
The National Guard, they are armed and patrolling. And they are in orders of magnitude more of them.
And this is how he views his power over D.C.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
So, Mr. President, now the 30 days is up, and does everything, is there any...
Well, the mayor's asked us to stay.
Well, how do you...
So we have a Democrat mayor who's asked us to stay. And D.C.'s a little bit different, because I could federalize it if I want. You know, D.C.'s a little bit different, so we have a lot. We have actually more power in D.C. because it's, you know, I can change the mayor if I want. I can do whatever I want. I haven't had to. We've had a great relationship with the mayor. We've had a great relationship. Everybody's happy. And the mayor was not in favor of it. At first, we, you know, forced, and then she saw the results. And everyone's going up and thanking her. We have no crime anymore. People that were afraid to leave, that they have themselves locked in their house. And by the way, they have guns to protect themselves. If they didn't have guns, you know, the bad guys know that Mrs. Jones, who's 85 years old, is sitting in a chair with a gun in her hand, and they leave her alone, okay? If she didn't have a gun, they wouldn't leave her alone. But D.C. is a great example. The mayor is a very liberal person, was not in favor of this.
No, she's not.
And now all of a sudden she's being praised by the people in the community. Everybody wants, who doesn't want it to happen? Like in Chicago, if you took a poll, do you want to have no crime, or do you want to walk outside and get mugged or killed? I mean, they're losing 6, 7, 8, 9 people every week. And 30 or 40 are being shot. That's worse than Afghanistan.
So, wait a minute. Is D.C. now crime-free, quote-unquote, fat air quotes here, because the National Guard and the roving band of masked secret police of Donald Trump, or because of 85-year-old Mrs. Jones with her gun? I'm very confused about the justification and the reasons for the crime-free nature of our city now, even though someone just got murdered last week. Apparently, crime isn't at zero. But the more alarming thing is Donald Trump declaring himself our king. We, living in Washington, D.C., are the subjects of King Donald I. He can appoint, he can do whatever he wants to the city of Washington.
Yeah, listen, every time you call your senators, every time you call your representative, please know that you are also calling them in our honor.
Yes.
Because we do not have representation in Congress in the way that everyone else does.
And when you do call them, call the number 202-224-3121. Once again, 202-224-3121. That is the Capitol switchboard.
But the right wing is continuing to lean into this, like we said, declaring war, amplifying the dangers that already exist in this current political moment where they are out for blood. And it's not just like the Laura Loomer types or the libs of TikTok types, these conservative activists who exist online in these spaces that amplify harm to people. It's also people on Fox News, like Laura Ingraham, who said this just the other night.
This agony we're all feeling must not dissipate into a stubborn apathy or morph into a violent rage. But we do need to embrace the truth at the same time that the left has a lot to answer for at this moment. We've been warning for years that their rhetoric would lead us to a very dark place.
Is she fucking high? Donald Trump shared a video of a truck with wrapped, full color, realistic images, AI images of Joe Biden hogtied with a rag in his mouth on his way to torture and possible execution. But our rhetoric is leading to violence? Megyn Kelly and Steven Crowder were on their show the other day talking about blood in the streets And I'll, look, I'm not advocating for it, but I get it. I understand when blood in the street happens as retribution for Charlie Kirk. Mm-hmm. Get the fuck out of here.
I just want to read a comment from someone who's likely saying this kind of stuff online. They're like, you guys, you need to tone down the rhetoric. The leftists, they're out of control. Their rhetoric is out of control. This comment's from Wes Carey. Open your mouth, Brittany, and get ready to swallow. We are going to increase your very low IQ. Gulp it down, you libtard.
Wait, this is the same guy who says you're stupid because you gulp it down. But he's going to make you smarter by making you gulp it down?
Yeah, I guess that's how, you know, all their heroes like Elon Musk have a high IQ. I'm not sure. I guess it's directly correlated with some sort of gulping. I'm not sure. But no, I'm making a point that these people that are online calling for the rape of women that they don't like,
right,
calling for the murder of people on the left, are now suddenly saying, hey guys, your rhetoric, the people who are out here calling the left cockroaches.
Yeah, they have no moral authority in this moment at all.
No,
none of them.
No, Donald Trump calls the left scum. He straight up says, I'm not interested in talking about the left. They're the problem.
Yeah.
He directly gives the green light for violence to occur when he does something like pardon all of the January 6th insurrectionists, pardon Stuart Rhodes, who is now ready to mobilize again.
He said about Liz Cheney, a Republican, we'll see how she feels when the rifles are trained at her face.
Yeah,
just get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But the other aspect of this is the manhunt lasted almost 2 days. I think it was just over 33 hours, I think is what it was.
To his credit, Kash Patel and also Dan Bongino, they did a bang-up job. They really solved it. They cracked the case wide open because of their gumshoe talent and wonderful ability. I can't even do it.
Well, let me just say, whenever, because I listen to these press conferences when these events happen, and more often than not, the press conferences from the police or the FBI or whatever it is most of the time is spent like congratulating each other for the good job that they're doing and thank you for the cooperation. I'm sure that there is some point to that in terms of engendering like cross positive feelings or something between the branches. I don't know.
Well, they want the public to feel that way too, and they want the public to think they're doing a good job. But the FBI did nothing but inhibit progress in this investigation.
Yeah, there were several missteps. We're going to get to that in a moment. But it's just always interesting to me that they also congratulate each other for solving the crime, when in this case, his family turned him in.
Right.
You didn't solve the crime. His family turned him into you, like after 33 hours. If his family hadn't turned him in, would that have been solved even by hour 36? I mean, come on now, Kash Patel. So Andrew McCabe, who used to work in the FBI.
Deputy director of the FBI.
Dan Bongino's current position. went on to talk about the job that Kash Patel was doing. And just so we say, Kash Patel, the current FBI director, he is someone who like used to go on Steve Bannon's show and was like deep in QAnon conspiracy theories. He's when you hear these mashups of Trump people talking about the Epstein files, you're inevitably hearing Kash Patel,
yes,
who used to be like, we need to expose this cabal of child sex traffickers, these elites who are doing this.
Yeah.
And now that he's the FBI director, you know, they've reported on clashes that he's had with Pam Bondi, whatever. But we see what's happening with the Epstein files, right?
I love so funny when people who are opponents of Kash Patel, they talk about how the director and deputy director of the FBI are just a couple of podcasters.
Yeah. And so,
and it's true. It's fucking true.
And when you hear Andrew McCabe right now talk about that, about the missteps that happened here, you will see what the issue is when you fire people from the FBI, you retain people based on loyalty to the president and not ability.
Yeah.
Kash Patel, the FBI director, flew to Utah today, but did not speak. And this is after a couple of days of several tweets that really got ahead of what they actually had in terms of a suspect or a subject in this investigation. What do you make of the fact that we didn't hear from him tonight?
Yeah, you know, that one's really hard to figure out. There are many good reasons why you wouldn't go, if you're the director, you would not go out to the scene of an ongoing crisis, post-crisis investigation. I think that's many of the reasons why, you know, typically directors don't do that. One of the reasons not to do that is because the presence of the director imposes a huge burden on the field office. There's all kinds of arrangements that have to be made. There's all kinds of security concerns that arise. Transportation becomes very complicated. And that's the last thing you want to do to the field office while they're in the middle of investigating a critical incident. So, again, it's strange to go out there under those circumstances. Why he went and then did not say anything at the press conference, I really don't know. I'm a bit at a loss to understand, like, what was the purpose of going out there. If you're there, you know, you probably want to at least make very perfunctory comments about appreciating the hard work of the men and women that are doing the investigation, and of course thanking your partners for the sort of access and the relationship that you have. So
yeah,
I don't even know how to kind of guess at that at this point.
I know how to guess at it. They're treating it like it's fucking reality TV. That's why they're doing it. Even this, by the way, is kid gloving what's going on here. Mm. And I realize Andrew McCabe, I don't think it's an excuse for not telling the truth here about exactly what's going on, because Andrew McCabe knows better than anybody what the fuck is going on here. Mm-hmm. This is about optics and about treating this like a reality TV show.
Right. I also have to say that at the press conference where they announced that they had found the shooter, the governor...
That the shooter had turned himself into them.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That the governor, Spencer Cox, said that he had been praying. I'm trying to find it right now, but
that he wasn't one of us.
Yeah, I have like 35 tabs open right now, so I can't find it. He was praying, yeah, that the shooter would not be from America.
Yeah.
He explicitly admitted that he was hoping that
the shooter... Man, I hope it's an immigrant.
Right. I mean, imagine that coming out of your mouth.
He said, I hope he's not one of us because this is not who we are. Yeah, the fuck it is.
It's maybe the most
thing we are.
Prominent example of who we yeah. are. I mean, come on. And our refusal to grapple with that is why it will never change. Until someone like Spencer Cox acknowledges the fundamental problem that is happening in this country, we're not going to be able to deal
with it. He's a piece of shit, too. He's a guy who came out a few years ago and acted like, oh, we need to be good people to the trans community and the LGBTQ community. And he's since completely turned his back. He's a fucking traitor and not a good person.
And so also Kash Patel ended his speech saying, see you in Valhalla, to Charlie Kirk.
Which, by the way, I want to point out that a lot of people are just making jokes about it, that he's a Hindu telling a Protestant that he'll meet him in a pagan Norse afterlife. But it's a bigger signal than that.
Yeah, it's from Norse mythology, and Norse mythology is big in neo-Nazi white power activist circles because you believe you're descendant from the Vikings.
Yeah, didn't you as a child have coloring books of Odin and Freya and all that shit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, and we were taught we were descendants of the Vikings, and we had like Nordic tiles decorated
None
around
of that's
the house
true.
And like little Viking statue things on the walls. And but yeah, I mean, he's directly acknowledging this reference from Norse mythology of this place that warriors go to be with Odin, you know. So when I heard that, I literally laughed out loud. I was driving home and I just laughed out loud, like, oh my God, how explicit can these references be?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, he might as well fucking say Zeke Heil or something.
It was so remarkable to me. And most of it goes over people's heads because it's not a signal for normal people who aren't steeped in
right.
this stuff.
Well, it's meant not to be a signal for normal people.
Right. It's meant to be a signal to the people who are calling in terroristic threats to HBCUs. So I also want to play this clip. It's not necessarily part of Charlie Kirk at all. In fact, it was before Charlie Kirk was killed. Fox and Friends was doing a segment on the death of the Ukrainian woman who was stabbed. On the train in North Carolina.
So tragic.
Absolutely horrific. Terrifying. The video is...
I have refused to watch it.
The video is especially horrifying because people, instead of helping her, walked away from her. And, you know, that's always sad to see in public. I know people are afraid and people don't know what to do, but I want people to kind of think in advance, you know, and plan in advance. And it's hard to do because in the moment, different things happen and you have different emotional responses. And maybe people have their own traumas that they're grappling with in that moment. Yeah, and it's
someone's dying. A woman is dying.
Yeah. And well, yeah. And I mean, I don't know what people recognized, if they could tell, if even she knew what was happening. She seemed very confused. But it was, you know... unfortunately, Donald Trump has capitalized on this, and you know Caroline Leavitt loved the optics of this. They put up two posters behind Caroline Leavitt to discuss this horrific stabbing of this Ukrainian immigrant, and she's like this pretty white girl, and the man who stabbed her is a black man, and they had the pretty little image of her versus the black man at like his mugshot.
Right.
And all I could think was the optics of this are very intentional. And it's scary because of their rhetoric, and they know exactly what they're doing. And they are trying to amplify attacks on marginalized communities.
Yep.
And that imagery is perfectly designed to ratchet up further racist hatred and abuse. When we know a white man was just arrested for murdering Charlie Kirk, okay?
Right.
Many different races murder people, okay? And instead, on Fox and Friends... God, this clip is truly remarkable, especially in the context of people being fired for not mourning Charlie Kirk appropriately or for saying something that's maybe technically a little, I don't know, out of step with.
Not even, you don't have to be celebratory about it. If you've said the things I've said, they think it's celebrating. If you've said he's a racist, Christian nationalist bigot, that's celebrating, even though I've said countless times that he didn't deserve to die.
Yeah. So here's this Fox and Friends segment where they're discussing this horrific stabbing of this woman. And just listen for what Brian Kilmeade says and think about how people right now are losing their jobs.
He offers a solution.
Right. People are losing their jobs right now for not effectively mourning Charlie Kirk in the correct way. And this is what Brian Kilmeade has to say about people in the streets.
We don't have to, we feel so compassionate because you see the mental health crisis happening.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not our job. We shouldn't have to live in fear while they figure out what's going on right there.
Right.
Put them in a mental institution, put them in a jail, and you guys figure it out. But people having to duck and dive on the trains and the buses, walking through the street, this is one case, but this is happening all across the country, and it's not a money issue. They have given billions of dollars to mental health and the homeless population. A lot of them don't want to take the programs. A lot of them don't want to get the help that is necessary. You can't give them a choice. Either you take the resources that we're going to give you, and or you decide that you're going to be locked up in jail. That's the way it has to be now.
Or involuntary lethal injection or something. Just kill them.
Yeah, Brian, why did it have to get to this point?
Right.
They don't even acknowledge it. It doesn't even come back up to like, hey, dude, that was a little far.
This is an extreme example of what you hear all the time. Oh, well, why are we doing this program? Well, we got homeless vets. Well, let's give it to homeless vets. No, we can't do that. This isn't socialism. It's the same thing they say about violent crime and shootings and stuff is, well, we've got a mental health crisis in this country. All right, well, let's solve that crisis. Oh, yeah, kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all about hate. It's all about violence. It's all about ratcheting up fear and otherizing marginalized communities. As though someone with a mental illness chooses the thing that they're afflicted with. It's barbaric.
Absolutely. It makes me sick. And to know that there's going to be zero consequences and that they're trying to have this like moral high ground about what language is being used right now when he explicitly said just kill people who have mental illnesses on the streets.
Yeah.
It's disgusting, especially when they are at a higher risk of violence. But Brian Kilmeade, I just looked it up, is 61 years old. This is the same argument I used to hear senior year of high school when I would argue with the kids in my class, in my government class, and they would tell me to send that they want to solve homelessness by sending all homeless people to an island and blowing it up.
Those kids are probably now adults who are sharing Live Like Charlie memes on their fucking Facebook pages.
I mean, it was probably Brian Kilmeade in three trench coats as a kid in my class. I don't know. Like, it, you know, in three trench coats, that's not the saying at all.
He's also, well, I think everybody got what you mean. Yeah. But I think he's... Anyway, moving on.
Well, not moving on. I'm not done here because...
No, I was going to make fun of his height and people get pissed off when I do.
I want to touch on your point about how you don't choose the mental illness. So,
yeah.
So also think about that, okay? First of all, mental illness means so many different things. There are millions of people in this country who have a major depressive disorder, mental illness. There are millions of people who have generalized anxiety disorder. I don't know anything about that. I'm not one of them. I never even heard of that. mentally ill, okay? They believe people who are trans are mentally ill.
Yeah.
Right? So their definition of mental illness is who knows what who would be making the decisions here for who's going to be
killed,
murdered on the street.
Killed.
Right. And you don't know when a mental...
I just want to use his words.
Yes, thank you. Mental illness can hit anyone. It's not your fault. You can suddenly have an onset of psychosis and be completely out of touch with reality. You could have schizophrenia. And instead of having compassion for people that go through this, they are saying that you should be killed.
Yeah, it's a medical condition. What's next? Colon cancer? Kill them. Involuntary injection. Kill them.
Well, and something I think of is right now, Bruce Willis's wife, Emma Heming Willis, is making the rounds promoting her new book about being a caregiver for her husband who has dementia, and it's kind of a guide for other caregivers who are taking care of their loved ones who have a dementia diagnosis. And Bruce Willis is now living separately in a home where he can be taken care of 24/7 because he doesn't fully understand that he has a diagnosis. He doesn't seem, you know, he's losing his language abilities, he's losing other abilities, and so in order to be safe, he's being taken care of 24/7 in a home.
And also, we don't know about him specifically, but doesn't this particular condition often come with, like, sexual outbursts or sexual inhibition? Like, weird, it comes with it, like, with not typical dementia-type behavior.
Yeah, I don't know about his particular
That's
diagnosis.
What I said.
Yeah,
we don't
but
know about
but
him.
Yeah, sure, things can happen. And so what I'm saying is there's sympathy for Bruce Willis. Widespread sympathy because he is sick. Because
of mental illness.
Because he has this diagnosis
that
happened to him.
Brian Kilmeade, kill him.
Right. And
kill
so
him.
And what if Bruce Willis wasn't Bruce Willis? What if he didn't have millions of dollars? What if he wasn't wealthy? What if he didn't have the resources to be put in a second home and taken care of 24/7? This is why it is so maddening to me to hear a man who has all of the wealth that he could ever dream of, Brian Kilmeade, talking about people who are in poverty, who are suffering in our society, as though they are people who should just be killed.
Yeah.
And what happened to the sanctity of life? Aren't they always telling us about the sanctity of life?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently not.
Or the pro-life party, Brittany.
Right.
You can't deny that. Very pro-life.
So the other really important story that we need to get to, and this is going to involve some media criticism, is the Epstein estate finally releasing that letter.
The whole birthday book.
The whole birthday book, yeah, was dumped by the massive dumps, by the Epstein estate. And it's disgusting. And I would recommend that you go and look through it. Because there are many people who knew exactly who and what Jeffrey Epstein was, and they were happy to be connected to him. And Donald Trump was close with him. And it's not just the birthday letter where they talked about Let Every Day Be Another Wonderful Secrets and how enigmas never age and what the fuck could that possibly mean?
And also, Jeffrey, you and I have a lot in common,
yeah.
Jeffrey.
But he...
Bill Clinton in a book, by the way.
Yeah, good. I mean, not good, but...
I hope he fucking burns to the ground.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Fucking rapey perv.
But Fox News sent a news alert to my phone. Bill Clinton in the Epstein estate book, birthday book.
Fox News.
And I'm like, okay, wait, Donald Trump was also in the book, guys. But Donald Trump is, of course, ignoring it. I mean, denying it. He says it's not his signature. This whole battle is taking place. He's suing...
his identical signature to several other signatures from that era with the same type font from the typewriter. All of it's the same. But that's not, what? That's not me. That's not me.
Decades ago, they knew Donald Trump would be president, and so they planted this letter in the book decades ago, knowing that it would come back in this very moment.
And Jeffrey Epstein knew it was a forgery in there, but he kept it in his birthday book because, you know, I guess he loves forged Donald Trump messages.
Well, and it's not just that. There's also a check that is signed by Donald Trump, and they're like a fake check. It's a joke, quote unquote, a joke of selling a fully depreciated woman to Jeffrey Epstein, or to Donald Trump, actually, because he's the one who signed the
check. She was in her 20s at the time, so apparently you're fully used up and depreciated when you're a model in your 20s.
Interesting. I wonder what that could be referencing.
So what would make you not fully depreciated? Apparently, if you're 15 or 13, then you're not fully depreciated. Now you're ripe for the picking for a Donald Trump or a Jeffrey Epstein.
Interesting. So this created some headlines for a day. And Caroline Leavitt took some questions about it, particularly from Maggie Haberman. And one of the things that I think was wise of Maggie Haberman, who I have criticisms for, but to hone in on here, is if they're calling this a conspiracy theory and they're saying that this isn't his letter, this isn't his signature, like, what is their theory then? How do they explain the existence of this letter? How did it come to be? Why would it have been planted? Like, what is the conspiracy theory?
Can I also, before we get to the clip, also mention that there were mock-ups done of people who just kind of based on the description drew, and it was a woman that was like voluptuous in the line drawing. Mm-hmm. And when the drawing came out, it was not that. It was more girlish, if you will. Mm-hmm. Should we get to the clip?
Yeah.
So what is the theory, since these documents came from the Epstein estate? I guess, in your view, faking these documents?
I did not say the documents are a hoax. I said the entire narrative surrounding Jeffrey Epstein right now that is absorbing many of the liberal cable channels on television is a hoax that is being perpetuated by opportunistic Democrats like Ro Khanna and the others whom you saw on that press conference outside of Capitol Hill who are trying to push this hoax against the President of the United States.
What exactly is the hoax? I'm just trying to understand what's...
Before she gets to her explanation of what the hoax is, the press conference with Ro Khanna, that's where the victims, Jeffrey Epstein's dozens of victims, gathered on Capitol Hill and told their stories. That's the Democrat hoax she's talking about.
Fake. What's fake is not the documents.
The hoax is the Democrats pretending to care about victims of crime when they do not care about victims of crime, when they have done nothing to solve crimes, when they have done nothing to lock up child pedophiles and child rapists across the country.
If he didn't sign these, if you said he didn't sign the birthday card, he didn't do this, he also didn't do the check, those were in documents from the estate. So what is the working theory as to why he's in them?
The president has one of the most famous signatures in the world, and he has for many, many years. You know that, Maggie, you've covered him for a long time, long before he assumed this office when he was a businessman in New York. The president did not write that letter. He did not sign those documents. He maintains that position, and that position will be argued in court by his lawyers. The president is very confident he is going to win this case.
Imagine breathlessly defending someone who is credibly accused of raping children.
Yeah, it's very, very remarkable. Because there's the reason that he's flat out denying this letter is because there is literally no innocent explanation. If he were to acknowledge, because he's just said, right? Yeah, of course, I was friends with Jeffrey Epstein. That's public knowledge. I kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago. We distanced ourselves once I knew who he was. That's the claim, right? There's no claim.
Except we found out that not to be true. They distanced themselves when he was stealing his employees from the spa, the greatest spa in the world.
Yeah, I'm saying that's the claim.
Yeah.
And then later he did say he stole her from Mar-a-Lago, talking about a teen child that was then sex trafficked by Jeffrey Epstein, stolen from Mar-a-Lago, quote unquote, a human being.
And raped by Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, who Donald Trump is now giving cushy, special, privileged treatment in a minimum security fucking country club prison.
Right. And yeah, I mean, it's none of these people should work again. None of them should be in power. None of them should have prominent positions. It's remarkable what people do to sell out in order to obtain power. It's something that I really struggle to understand. It's something that does not compute for me.
It is interesting, though, and I'm glad Maggie Haberman, she did a good line of questioning there, because she should have gone a little harder on, yeah, but these aren't from some Democratic committee.
Right.
These aren't from Democrats in Congress. This is from the Jeffrey Epstein estate that has been in control of the Jeffrey Epstein estate. This wasn't meddled with or fraudulent or forged by Democrats. This is from Jeffrey Epstein.
Right, right. Yeah, so they don't have a theory, and they can't acknowledge that the letter is authentic because there's literally no innocent explanation.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So they're really in a difficult spot, and they have no choice but to continue to lie, which they do very well, and distract and hope that people continue to move on.
What the strange thing about it is, when you've got them dead to rights, why, again, a media, why is the media bending over backwards in advance of their question saying, well, there's no any evidence at all of any wrongdoing from Donald Trump. We just want to get that out of the way before I ask you any questions that are going to fail to get to any answers. Isn't it just bizarre?
Well, and remember, Thomas Massie, Republican, together with Ro Khanna, Republican, are trying to gather signatures in order to force a floor vote for legislation to force the release of the Epstein files. And so you need to be calling your representatives if they are Republicans, especially because Thomas Massie needs Republicans to get on board with this.
202-224-3121.
And if you are telling your Republican representatives that you demand the release of the Epstein files. I know many people are kind of nihilistic at different points throughout this process, and they say, well, it doesn't matter if we call, they don't care what we think.
Yeah, but it does matter.
It does matter. Please call, please keep the pressure on. It's something that does matter. But what else is unfortunate about this is the media, like you were saying earlier, Jesse, is kind of complicit in whitewashing Donald Trump's history with Jeffrey Epstein, with his connections to the Epstein files. And after the Epstein estate released this birthday book, all of these documents, this was CNN host Brianna Keeler interviewing, I believe, Representative Greg Kassar. And she was quick to highlight that there's no evidence of wrongdoing.
We should note, it's important too, there has been, we've seen no sign of wrongdoing on Trump's part.
So that is important to note. It's really important to note that there's no wrongdoing. This is really representative of something actually that we didn't talk about when we were talking about the Charlie Kirk stuff. I have long been talking about with people in my circles that we are going to start seeing violence.
Yeah.
And that's because people are starting to feel like there's not a lot of recourse for them to, in a democratic process, bring up their dissent.
Yeah, move the needle at all.
Institutions are caving to fascism. We're seeing that.
The media is.
We're seeing that with the media, with the CBS settlement, with the hiring of the media bias monitor that's a Trump sycophant at CBS.
The ABC settlement. George Stephanopoulos.
Right.
The 60 Minutes one.
We're seeing the universities cave to pressure. We're seeing the courts not standing against fascism.
We have two absolutely feckless leaders in Congress in Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries who bring nothing to the fight whatsoever. No passion, no motivation, no incentive for voters. It's disheartening.
And as people see that, they start to feel like their only recourse...
It isn't their only recourse.
Is violence.
They feel like that.
Right, and it's not. And that's why we spend so much time talking about... Call your representatives. Get connected with your community. Get out there in the streets and protest.
Because, well, violence is only going to make things worse.
Well, and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
Charlie Kirk gets shot in the neck and is killed. And the right-wing massive infrastructure that is completely in control goes overtime to amplify the targets that already exist on the backs of marginalized communities.
Yeah.
And anyone who happens to be considered a, quote, enemy from within.
Someone in front of the Idaho State Capitol, they had like a candlelight fucking vigil for racist Christian nationalist bigot Charlie Kirk. And someone rode by on like a scooter or a bicycle and said, fuck Charlie Kirk or something. And was beaten mercilessly by a mob of white men.
Yeah, so it's genuinely a scary time.
Yeah.
It's scarier for people who are in marginalized communities who are being directly targeted by this administration. And, I mean, we feel that And if we are feeling that, we know that the marginalized communities are feeling that.
That's why it's so incumbent upon the media. Like, the, it's the only occupation listed in the Constitution of the United States is protected. The free and fair press and the First Amendment of the Constitution. And they are just missing the moment, not doing their jobs. It's not just Breonna Keeler.
No, also Jonathan Berman, who was talking to, I believe, Representative Dave Minn from Orange County.
Yeah, our former district.
And they were going back and forth about, again, this birthday book drop, about the Epstein estate dropping it. And Jonathan Berman actually decided at the end of this clip, for some reason, to use Ghislaine Maxwell as a reference for why there's no evidence of Donald Trump having anything to do with wrongdoing in this Epstein case.
Again, I do want to say we have no reason to think that he was in any way involved with that check itself. Also, no reason to think he's detected any wrongdoing involving Jeffrey Epstein. You noted, you're a prosecutor, you're a lawyer here, there's this defamation.
I would say we have lots of reasons to think he was involved in wrongdoing. I mean, at this point, there's a lot of smoke. There may be some fire, but I would just push back and say I think there's a lot of reason to think Donald Trump was involved.
Involved with what? I'm sorry, what exactly, what proof do you have that he was involved with wrongdoing in regards to Jeffrey Epstein? And if that's the case, why have there been no prosecutions over 20 years here? Because there haven't really been any allegations that he was involved with wrongdoing.
Jesus.
There are a lot of connections where Donald Trump was named, right? We had a 14-year-old claiming that she was raped by him, then withdrew that claim after she was apparently threatened. His name appears a lot. We at this point, our job is to find justice for these survivors, and that means that we need to continue digging, knowing that there is a cover-up taking place right now. And I didn't say that we have proof. At this point, we have like a lot of smoke. But Donald Trump's name is clearly mentioned multiple times. We've seen him lie over and over about things that we now know to be true. So, I think that we, as the Oversight Committee, deserve, we owe an obligation to the girls, the American people out there, to keep digging and find out the truth, whoever's involved.
Again, Donald Trump has not been named in any connection or charged with.
We get it, John Berman.
Ghislaine Maxwell, take this for what it is. But Ghislaine Maxwell said, she never saw Donald Trump or anyone, for that matter, engaged in any wrongdoing connected to Jeffrey Epstein. Dave Mid, Congressman from California.
I will just point out that Ghislaine Maxwell was indicted for perjury after she made that statement that you mentioned, transferred to minimum security prison in Texas. So, again.
Yeah, Dave Mintz should have gone harder. I appreciate that effort, but also Jonathan Berman, take this as you will. You know what?
Well, take everything the guest just said with a grain of salt, y'all.
Did you hear that he was incredulous? He responded, he's like, what exactly is the, how is he implicated?
Right. Unbelievable.
What is happening?
Listen, John Berman is somebody who up to this, I've never seen a gaffe. Like, for me, this is an editorial decision from up above. Because John Berman is not a dumb fuck at all. And John Berman isn't a patsy like this. He's being ordered to do this by producers, by executives, by suits at CNN. Mm-hmm. He shouldn't be doing it. It's just as easy to not fucking say the things you just said.
Right. Listen, if you're interested in the Epstein file situation, and you don't remember all the initial reporting that exposed Jeffrey Epstein from Julie K. Brown,
Miami Herald,
you need to go read it, okay? Because you may have forgotten in the years what Ghislaine Maxwell's role was, but she was directly involved in the abuse of the girls.
In the rapes.
She also facilitated the program that they had in place of recruitment of the girls. She would recruit the girls, and she would kind of facilitate the continued recruitment. Those girls would then go and get other girls. She was directly involved in the facilitating the rape of and in the rape of girls.
And for years after she testified that her relationship with Jeffrey Epstein was over. For years longer. She didn't just lie in her trial. She lied to the DOJ just recently in her meeting with Todd Blanche, Donald Trump's personal defense attorney,
right,
who's now a high-level position within the DOJ.
Yeah, I loved the clip, too, of attorney Arthur Idala, who was on
another fucking wonder
Abby Phillips show, and he said there's always a quid pro quo, specifically related to that Ghislaine Maxwell thing. And I meant to put up, like, a mashup, because I don't think people know who Arthur Idala was. He's Harvey Weinstein's attorney.
Right, who has cried
So
buckets of tears.
I went back and I couldn't find him crying. So I think that's a false memory I created, but he talked about other people crying.
I saw that clip. That's not a false memory for you.
Okay, then help me find it because I can't find it and I'm trying to make a mashup.
Yes.
But he at least would talk about how Harvey Weinstein told him I'm innocent. I never raped anyone.
Yeah.
He's been treated so poorly, like all this stuff. And I don't think people know that that's who Arthur Idala is.
Yes.
It reminded me of the Fleabag scene when Claire is telling Fleabag that she has hired an attorney and he mainly defends rapists. And Fleabag's like, oh, so pretty good like success rate then. And she's like, oh, undefeated.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, on this Ghislaine Maxwell story, Bloomberg obtained more than 18,000 emails from a personal Yahoo account. Kind of strange that
these fucking
Jeffrey
people.
Epstein was using Yahoo.
You've got
for
mail. This fucking AOL.
What's going on?
Oh, I got an Earthlink website.
Yeah, but he he obtained Bloomberg obtained, not he, Jesus. Jason Leopold from Bloomberg obtained more than 18,000 emails and went through them. And he was recently interviewed on CNN, and I specifically highlighted this section where they talk about Ghislaine Maxwell because I'm really hoping Jonathan Berman is a fan of I Doubt It podcast.
You also note in the emails that you obtained that Epstein and his ex-girlfriend Ghislaine Maxwell, who's in prison right now, exchanged emails about trying to discredit the women who raised allegations against them. Tell us more about that.
Sure. So this is another story that we published this morning, and this is based on 650 emails that Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein exchanged, and it really gets to... you know, you get to see how close their partnership was. And within those emails, there are discussions that you know, that's taking place in which Maxwell, you get the sense that the heat is turning up on Maxwell. And she is discussing with Epstein how they can discredit ultimately Virginia Giuffre. And she asked him for, and this is in 2014, by the way, in an email, can you give me whatever your attorneys have, the files on Virginia? Mm. And basically within those files, whereas it appears to be some sealed documents, confidential documents, and sometime later, a story pops up in the New York Daily News related to what was in those confidential files.
Fascinating stuff. Jason Leopold of Bloomberg, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Great reporting.
I want you to remember this, though.
Appreciate it.
Everybody. 2006 was Jeffrey Epstein's conviction, and that's when she claimed in sworn testimony, sworn statements to the federal government, to the Department of Justice, to Todd Blanche, that she had nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein after that. She knows nothing. I'm not a party to him. I don't know anything. These emails are from 2014, 8 years later.
Mm-hmm.
She's a fucking liar, John Berman. She's a liar. Well, she said this. Yeah, the liar said this. The convicted perjurer said this. The fucking child rapist said this.
Who wants something from Donald Trump.
Yes.
And who got something from Donald
right.
Trump in the form of being moved to a... you know, lesser security prison.
And he's floating the idea of a pardon for her. Well, I can do it. I'm allowed to do it, he says.
Well, remember when she was prosecuted and he said that he wished her well?
He wished her well.
I mean, come on, guys. Where is QAnon on all of this?
Right.
But another part of this was, this is just the last thing we'll say on this from the Bloomberg reporting, which is also really interesting. I would recommend you go read it if you're interested in this story. They write, Maxwell has repeatedly said that she was kept in the dark about details of Epstein's initial sexual abuse case in the mid-2000s, yet the emails demonstrate how she helped him strategize over even the most consequential details. Question, Epstein wrote to her on May 23rd, 2008, which one do you prefer? Lewd and lascivious conduct or procuring minors for prostitution?
Ugh.
Imagine the power that this fuck thinks that he has, that he's like, which charge do you think is better for me to just say that I would prefer and that I'm going to get?
Yeah.
Because of the power and money.
And
that
he got
have.
A sweetheart fucking deal from Alex Acosta, who was the U.S. attorney for one of the districts in Florida. before he was the labor secretary, hand-picked labor secretary for Donald Trump. So John Berman, I don't know why we would think Donald Trump has anything to do with this. Who fucking knows, John Berman? It's a mystery to the rest of us.
Let me finish.
You fucking goddamn goofball.
Just continuing with this brief part, according to Bloomberg. At the time, Epstein's defense lawyers were closing in on a generous plea deal with federal and state officials in Florida, and Epstein was trying to negotiate the state charges to which he'd plead guilty. Maxwell's response was matter of fact, quote, "I suppose lewd and lascivious conduct. I would prefer lewd and lascivious conduct with a prostitute, if possible."
Wow!
What the fuck are we doing? Why are institutions failing us? Why? I mean, I know why the Family Values Party is defending Donald Trump tooth and nail. It's because they're not the Family Values Party. They're liars. They're not the party of protecting children. They're liars. They're the party of protecting the cult leader, the dear leader, Donald Trump, and the fascist agenda, and corporations, and billionaires, and Christo-fascism.
I am. Something that is interesting to me about this, the most interesting part of this, is the Wall Street Journal reporting that initially exposed the birthday letter. And now we know, given the Epstein estate giving the birthday book, we know that it truly existed. But I'm curious about the motivation behind the Wall Street Journal publishing that initial reporting.
The Rupert Murdoch-owned Fox News sister company.
Because nothing is done without...
Yes, Lachlan Murdoch.
...certain approvals. And so my question is, like, what's going on behind the scenes that they're kind of ready to go toe-to-toe?
Maybe they see the writing on the wall. Maybe they know information that isn't public yet. I mean, I don't know. It is interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting question for me.
I would say this. When you think about, if you're not totally in the know about how Fox News and the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal and all of the different tributaries that are owned by Lachlan Murdoch, who just now is officially in control now. If you watch the show...
Kendall Roy.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to say.
Oh.
If you watch the show Succession,
mm-hmm.
think about how no editorial decision was made that Logan Roy didn't know about.
Mm.
That's exactly... That show, people in the Murdoch family think that there was a mole giving family details to that show to write narratives because it was so accurate.
Yeah, during the...
That's been reported.
During the trial, that when the Murdoch family was fighting for power of who would get the power in the family.
Over the succession.
Right, in succession. Yeah. There were documents that showed they were having private discussions where they were like, how is this in the show?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
So that is how it works. Nothing happens at Fox News that doesn't have the explicit approval of Lachlan and Rupert Murdoch. Nothing happens at the Wall Street Journal that doesn't have the approval of those two people. Nothing happens at the New York Post. I can't think of the other company. Sky News, whatever the fuck.
Do you think one of the Murdoch kids accidentally sent a dick pic to Rupert Murdoch at the table
one
time?
To the general counsel?
Yeah. Do you think that was taken from real life?
People who didn't watch the show are like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Succession is so good, you guys. You have to watch it if you have not watched it.
It is a great show for this reason. That there's not a single good person in it, and you don't root for anybody. I wanted the whole thing to burn to the ground every fucking episode.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it does the interesting thing that all good shows do, though, where, you know, like Tony Soprano is a reprehensible person.
Yeah.
But
I wanted him caught the whole time.
But you find things that are likable about that. What I find interesting about the media that we consume and the art that we consume is when it comes to, like, characters, we're able to do that flexibility thing where we're like, yeah, life is complicated.
But
and
not
like,
with
look,
people in our real life.
Look what they've been through. They've been through this hard thing. And of course, we can put all their choices against the backdrop of things that have happened in their lives and like make it make sense. And then like for other people, we're like, what a piece of shit.
Yeah, you know? I think you're low-key fucking talking about me.
No, I'm not low-key talking about you. I'm talking
about
all of us.
Yeah, you're low-key talking about me. It's low-key.
Yep.
Not so low-key. All right, everybody.
I'm surprised.
The whole power structure's coming down.
I'm surprised.
Number one show in the world right now.
We're leaving.
I'm surprised we're laughing at the end of this show. Just given everything that's been happening, it's been like so stressful.
It's fucking terror.
Yeah, no, I'm happy that there's been like moments of levity where we're able to laugh because it has been hard. And we hope you are all taking care of yourselves. Please take breaks. Don't just scroll endlessly. Go outside. Go to the farmer's market.
Self care.
Give your dog a kiss, cuddle with your dog, cuddle with your cat, whatever you have going on. If you live in a cat house, cuddle that cat and, you know, take care of yourselves.
We love and appreciate you. Again, Jesus fucking Christ.
What is going...
We
you
love
want me to leave all
you.
These... I can't edit that.
You're leaving it.
I can't edit it based on what you did.
Yeah, so. Well, it's staying.
All right. I guess.
I'm the one who edits the show anyway.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, we do want to hear from you, 657-464-7609. And, of course, as always, you can email us.
Come on. You're just putting it on
no,
now.
No, I'm not. Why don't you finish, then?
You're just malingering.
Finish.
All right.
I'm not prepared.
Thank you, everyone, for being here.
Wow, really and... bringing the energy to the wrap-up. You know, you got to match the intensity of the outro music with your voice.
Right. All right. And we have been I Doubt It, and that's Jesse, and I'm Brittany, and we appreciate everybody, and take
all
care,
right.
And we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply in-app only.